Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening, I am Matt Beadle and this is Love Sport Radio. You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show here on Love Sport with Paul Denby from the Man City Show podcast. No Nigel Rothband this week, Paul.
No, you just got to put it with me this evening.
Well, I'm sure we will, absolutely. Now, we are going to speak about Manchester City throughout the course of the next hour, but we're also going to keep updating you on the situation in Sofia at the moment. England 4-0 up in Bulgaria as they lead Bulgaria 4-0. Just a very quick stat and a side note is that England have scored four or more goals in five games this year. That's the first time that's happened since 1937. However, more importantly, it's already well known that there has been racist chanting directed towards what we imagine the England players from a section of the Bulgaria fans. Now, UEFA have got their three-step protocol in force for this game. Now, we believe that step one was taken and that the stadium announcer made an announcement to ask the fans to stop what we have seen. Nazi saluting, we've heard monkey chants. That's been reported that there were about six separate incidents of monkey chanting in the space of about 10 minutes in Bulgaria. It then appeared that step two was going to be taken, where the players will be taken off the pitch along with the staff, and then the stadium announcer would make another announcement. That would be a temporary halt to play, just like the first incident. However, step three hasn't yet been taken. That will be all players walking off the pitch and the game being abandoned. It is understood that the entire FA delegation, including Chairman Greg Clark, have not taken their usual seats. Now, whether that's a stand or not, we don't know. But it's also understood that Gareth Southgate and the FA staff are very keen to let the UEFA and FA deal with this by the book, and therefore we believe the players won't yet leave the pitch. There has also been an incident of Bulgarian captain Ilian Popov speaking directly to the Bulgaria fans, and we imagine he's asking them to basically be quiet and act accordingly. However, it seems that that might fall on deaf ears, because the fans he's speaking to, we would imagine, are fans who haven't actually done anything wrong. The section of fans who we are guessing are what you'd label as ultras, who were there with black hoods on, doing the chanting, showing up a UEFA t-shirt that said no respect, have since departed the stadium. There is a massive concern that they are now waiting outside the stadium. So hopefully, we can only hope that there will be a strong police force outside the stadium in order to not let there be any more trouble. Paul, this is quite remarkable scenes, what we're seeing, isn't it?
It's terrible, really. It's a throwback to a long, long time ago, but it's sad that it still happens, but it seems to be, and in Eastern European countries, let's be honest about it, it does happen in some Western European countries. It happens in our country as well. We get racist chanting at ground, but it seems to be odd, isolated incidents, as opposed to a common theme that we see when England go to away games, when the English teams play in Europe as well. You get it occasionally as well. And I don't know what they... Well, I do know what they need to do. They need to be much harder on these countries. Slapping a €10,000 fine on them is absolute peanuts, even to the Bulgarian FA. Making them play in half-empty stadiums does not work, as has clearly been shown. They've got to do more to eradicate it. It's no good holding banners and posters up saying respect, etc., etc. They've got to punish these countries' football associations and make sure that the fans and the whole country, and us here, some people in this country too, go through a proper education process to stamp it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you were listening before you came on. We had Billy the B Grant from the Brentford Fan Show. As a black football fan, he did say, you know, it's something that he's had to endure his entire life. He said he was speaking to his daughter during the ads, and she's got no idea of what it was like for him, doesn't really understand what racism is about. And even sending, it was quite heartbreaking, really. She sent him an email because she doesn't use a phone, she's only a young kid, and they make contact via email, and she said, "Daddy, why are they booing the players?" I mean, that's so awful to hear.
It's terrible that a youngster has to pick up on racism, not really aware of what it's about, and a father having to go home at some point and maybe explain why this is happening, because his kid's going to grow up and feel that at some point in their lives, racism, unless we can stamp it out 100%, which is being realistic about it, highly unlikely it is going to continue to occur.
And, Paul, you've been a football fan for a long time now. I don't want to make out like you're a very old customer.
Several years.
Is this something that you experienced during your early years as a football fan?
I have seen it in the past. I'm Jewish, so I've been to see City at Tottenham Hotspur, and I hate it when some of the City fans, a minority again, start doing that. They don't do it anymore, to be fair, that's right, but when they used to do the hissing of the gas chambers, it really upset me. And if anybody ever did that right next to me, I would have said something. I'm only relatively small, but I just cannot stand certain aspects of racism, well, any form of racism, but if it's right in front of me, I will say something. And when you hear it at certain grounds, I'm abhorred. It's just not acceptable.
No, it's completely unacceptable, and you're right. And that's actually one of the questions I posed to Billy, was that, you know, if it was directed towards me or a group of people that I was with, and because I've not experienced a great amount of racism towards me or prejudice towards me over the years, it's hard for me to pass comment. However, if it did happen, I don't think I'd be able to just shrug my shoulders. I don't know, maybe that's the opinion of someone who hasn't had to endure that throughout the course of his life. But if it did happen to me, I would find it really difficult to not then go, well, hang on, go on then, say that again and say it to my face.
I'm with you. I would find it difficult, except, let's be honest about it. If there's a group of six or seven big thugs right in front of you carrying weapons of some description and being very aggressive, I would think twice about it. I've got to be honest, even if I was with a couple of mates. But I feel that in certain circumstances, and as I've said at places like White Hart Lane, when you hear it, it's just very, very upsetting. And I'd like to think that with the education process in place that's been going on for a number of years now, it has reduced over the years here.
It has indeed. And if we're going to look at the positives of tonight, England currently 4-0 up and Raheem Sterling in fine fettle. He has linked up incredibly well with Harry Kane, with Marcus Rashford, and in particular with Ross Barkley. And Raheem Sterling, I said earlier, has scored his customary goal for England.
He has. He's doing well since he was a subject of England Boo Boys, wasn't he? A tournament or so back where he didn't perform brilliantly. Whether the Boo Boys were right, I never boo a City player and I never boo an England player when they're playing for their country or for their team. But he's come on leaps and bounds, and I think he's a confidence player. He's shown that when Pep's put faith in him for playing for City. But he is not going, so far, he is not 100% consistent in his play. He doesn't come in, week out, and perform at what you might call world-class level. He has a few games, and he's had a couple recently, where he's not performed at the level that City supporters have come to hope that he would do. And if he can get over that dip in form, he has the potential to be one of the top three or four players in the world, no doubt about it.
So do you think that still is an issue with Raheem Sterling then, his consistency? Because I was asked the question on Posh Boys and Drive before we came on air tonight that Raheem Sterling is the main man for England. And I suggested that I wasn't entirely sure he was the main man for England, because while he's a very, very good footballer, in a Manchester City team, he is surrounded by world-class footballers, which I'm not saying makes him a better footballer, but it almost gives him, I don't know if you can say, less responsibility to perform to the extreme standards that in an England shirt you would require. So in terms of his consistency, I'm kind of in agreement, but then weirdly kind of not with that one, you know?
Yeah, excuse me. He's got to show that consistency to a greater level. I see him not every single week. I watch as many City games as I can, get to the games when I can. But he's not at the world-class level yet, because to be there, he just needs to keep that performance level at the top. In an England shirt, he does very well, particularly this season in these qualifiers, he's having good session. But to me, he's not a Lionel Messi, he's not a Ronaldo, because he doesn't do it week in, week out. In the City team, he can drop his level a little bit, and there are others that can cover for him. In an England shirt, I think is he the main man? Not sure there is a main man for England at the moment. I think it's a team effort with quite a few very good players, but they're not good enough. Are they good enough to win a tournament? We'll wait and see. I'm not sure they are yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as things stand, Raheem Sterling has scored the fourth goal as England are 4-0 up in Bulgaria. This is the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport. Plenty more coming up.
Love Sport.
This is the Manchester City fan show on Love Sport. And no sooner were we suggesting whether or not Raheem Sterling was the key man for England, he's just bagged his second of the game. As things stand, Bulgaria 0, England 5. Of course, there has been plenty of controversy in this game tonight, but Raheem Sterling picked up a lovely slide-through pass from Harry Kane and he has slipped it past the Bulgarian goalkeeper. Absolutely no problems whatsoever. That's one element of his game, Paul. I suppose you could say he has definitely improved upon his instinctive finishing.
Yes, most of the time, but like all strikers, I suppose he does miss some simple chances that you think, why did you miss that one? There was one a couple of weeks ago where it was possibly easier to score than not. But that one he took very well. I think he's better when he's got less time to think about it. That one he only had a second or so. There was a great ball by Kane, and it was he took it well. He just pushed it on his left foot to the side of the keeper. But again, he's a sort of player that could be on his day getting up towards 30 goals a season in a good team, and City are a good team, so he could quite easily get up there.
Absolutely, he could. And another man who has, I mean, many, many Manchester City players on international duty, of course, this weekend, Gabriel Jesus being one, apparently very, very good performance in what was a rather underwhelming clash for Brazil, but he bagged loads of plaudits. Sergio Aguero, obviously struggling with a bit of injury at the moment, but Ilkay Gundogan, a star performer for Germany against Estonia.
Yeah, two goals and an assist yesterday. And that might keep a few City fans quiet. He's got very mixed reviews with City fans, Gundogan. Some people just don't think he adds much value to the team. Clearly Pep does. And if you look at the Gundogan statistics, you know why. I think City use statistics an awful lot of the time. And he can play as a number six, as the defensive midfield player, particularly when we're not up against the big teams. And he can also play the number eight role, which I think is his favoured, where he's the box-to-box player. And the statistics on all these things, in both positions, are pretty good on him. His ball recovery rate is good, his interceptions are high, he scores more goals than a lot of players that play in that position. Maybe people don't see him putting those killer passes through as David Silva or De Bruyne, and that's what he gets measured against. If he was in most other Premier Division teams, I think a lot of City supporters would see him as being a very, very good player. He does an awful lot. He can read a game very well, and that is a fantastic asset. I think people think sometimes, why do we need to play a defensive midfield player and a Gundogan in the same team when we're playing against a Watford or I'm dissing a couple of teams, a lesser team, let's call it that way, rather than a big six team. And the reason is that Pep thinks, and 99% of the time, he knows best. He is a very good manager, and he plays Gundogan because he adds value to the team, not the same way as a De Bruyne or a Silva or a Bernardo Silva. But he thinks he needs him to do something that those players can't do.
Yeah, absolutely. And trust the process is what we always hear nowadays. But he got an 89% pass success rate yesterday. And that's, like you mentioned there, Paul, is one of his key attributes, isn't it? And actually, for a while, he held a Premier League record, I believe, when you regained the title for the first time, Pep's first title, and you beat Chelsea towards the end of the season. Bernardo Silva scored, I think. But in that particular game, Gundogan was top for passes completed, the amount of passes made, the amount of touches in a game. It was only eclipsed by Jorginho, I think, when he came into the Premier League. But it just goes to show that the great thing about it, and I think you're right in the sense that he's almost criticised and scrutinised more because he's in this Manchester City team. If he was in any other team, it wouldn't even be thought of. It would be like, oh, okay, he's the star midfielder. But because there is such talent within the squad there, that's why he gets picked up on. But the key thing for me, and this is what I love about specific footballers, Thiago Alcantara, who plays at Bayern Munich, is one of them. He wants the ball. He's comfortable on the ball. Never shirks.
No, he's a footballer. He reads the game well, which certain players can never do. He knows where the players in his team are making the runs. What he can do that you don't often see De Bruyne or David Silva do is that little dink over the top. And occasionally, you need to be able to do that to open the defence up in a different way than the De Bruyne crossfield ball, which is brilliant from the touchline, swerving into the edge of the six-yard box to be hopefully put into the back of the net, or the David Silva through ball. But Gundogan is a different player, and I think that's what Pep appreciates him for. And I know there's a lot of City fans possibly listening right now that are thinking he's talking a load of rubbish, but or even stronger language than that. But that's my view.
Another midfielder who has cropped up a fair few times on this show, it's fair to say, is the Stockport Iniesta. And I know that's how Nigel likes to refer to him all the time. I know that how that is how City fans refer to Phil Foden. But an ex-Man City manager in the form of Stuart Pearce has spoken out recently and said that he really needs to look at where he is at the moment, and suggested that maybe Foden should go on loan in January. I know we've spoken a lot about Pep's system for Foden and how he plans to integrate him into the side, but what's your take on it?
No way should he go on loan. I'm very firm on this. I think Foden has been patient. I think he will continue to be patient. For every Jadon Sancho who goes and leaves City and is very successful, doing very well at in Germany, fantastic and well done to him. There's other players that leave top clubs and go to out on loan or go to other clubs on transfers and never make it back. I think Foden has said this himself. He trains with the best players in the world, or some of the best players in the world, on a day-to-day basis. He is managed by one of the best managers in the world, arguably the best, but he's certainly in the top three or four. And therefore, if he goes out on loan, what's he going to benefit from that? Playing more regularly? I think it's up to Guardiola to play him a little bit more regularly. And now when the matches are starting to come a little bit more frequently now, we're back in the Champions League again next week, and then the League Cup comes around, so he'll get games in that as well. What I would like to see, and I'm never sure why Pep won't do this, is if we are winning games 2-3-0 with 10 minutes, 15 minutes to go, bring him on then. Don't just give him 2 or 3 minutes at the end. That is the bit I can't understand. And Foden is one for the future. We all know David Silva is going to retire at the end of this season, and Foden is his natural replacement. I don't think he needs to go out on loan. I think he needs to stay exactly where he is.
And it's interesting, there's been an article in the Manchester Evening News as well today that basically compares David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne to Phil Foden and the ages that they were that he is now. He's currently just over 19. And I guess on one hand, you can look at Mason Mount in the England squad at the moment, who is pulling up trees. Jadon Sancho, another one, in a similar age bracket to Phil Foden. They are, I guess, more advanced in terms of first team appearances and international call-ups. But if we're going to go on City projects alone, I know Jadon Sancho was obviously at Man City, now at Borussia Dortmund. David Silva, at the same age, he was on loan to Eibar in the second tier of Spanish football. He had not made a single top flight appearance. And when you compare that to Foden, who's already got 15 starts and 25 sub appearances, actually, he's ahead of the game when you compare him to David Silva. And of course, David Silva has gone on to make a huge impression both for club and country. In fact, it was 18 months after that that Silva even earned his first international cap. With regards to De Bruyne, at the age that Foden is now, just over 19, he made 20 league starts and 16 as a substitute for Genk. But that's Genk, and we're talking about the Belgian top flight, completely different to Manchester City in the Premier League. So in terms of his international call-ups for Kevin De Bruyne, he started early. But again, you look at the Belgian team at the time. I mean, I know they've now come up to be a team full of absolute superstars. But when De Bruyne was 19, they weren't pulling up trees at all. So I guess it's one of those that really, in the grand scheme of things, he's kind of getting a lot of football. But it's because we are so quick to promote and laud young English players, because we're so desperate ultimately for the next Paul Gascoigne, which we haven't been able to produce since 1990, that we kind of put the pressure on Pep because we want Phil Foden to be the superstar that we hope he might be.
We all hope he will be the superstar, and I think he will be. But why do we need to push him City at the moment? Okay, yeah, we've had a couple of poor results, and maybe the argument is now give him the chance. However, he is up against the De Bruynes, the Silvers, etc. And as we said a few months ago, if he was in most other teams, then he would be playing on a regular basis. But he is prepared to bide his time. He's 19. He knows he's signed a 5-year contract recently. He knows that his future will be with City. He knows he will get game time. I think because he's got blue blood in him as well, that helps him want to stay with the club. And he's biding his time very well. I think he's making the right decision by staying.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen players make wrong decisions as well. I think because Jadon Sancho has been such a success as well, that's kind of adding to the argument, isn't it? It's fueling the fire, of course, that a lot of these young players are now starting to go to Germany and make their name.
That's very true. People compare him to Sancho because they've both been at City, obviously, and Sancho is now in the England team and Foden still plays for the under-21s. But there's other players who failed, and I don't think Pep would want to ever see that perspective of Foden failing. I read somewhere that Guardiola said Foden wouldn't be sold even for €500 million. So I think he's got the faith in him.
Yeah, absolutely he has. That was, of course, picked up by a few other clubs and created a bit of a stir, I have to say, but fair enough to him. It's quite clear, Pep trusts Phil, Phil trusts Pep. It is all good. Just quickly, I want to ask you about Stuart Pearce, because we've not discussed him on this show before, and he came out and made those comments, and you could think, you know what, was he just saying it to get a bit of media attention, or does he genuinely believe that is the right thing for Phil Foden? But Stuart Pearce, an ex-Manchester City manager, you're grimacing slightly there. How is he viewed to Man City fans?
I think not too fondly, because as a player, we got him at the end of his career. He was a fantastic player. So let's focus on the positives. Mm-hmm. He missed a penalty that would have taken his goal tally. I can't remember the exact number now, but he missed a penalty. The last game of the season, yeah. He was given the penalty. And I think the keeper, we were already 5-0 up or something, and the keeper said, "You put it in the top left corner, I'll just stand still so you can score it." And he blasted it high and wide. And I suppose it summed up his penalty-taking abilities in some ways. No, being a bit unfair on him. So as a player, fantastic. As a manager, no. I could never see. We put faith in him initially. But there was that season, I think it might be out by season, 05-06, where I think we scored 10 goals in the whole of our home season. It was miserable. And I think we went from January till, I think it was even the end of the season, maybe almost the end of the season, we didn't score a goal at home. It was nil-nils and nil-ones and nil-twos. It was just dire. And people do remember Stuart Pearce's management of that time. And he was a defensive player. Obviously, we all know that. He was a left-back. Didn't seem to actually go forward and understand how to get the ball forward to attack and score. He was probably the reverse of Kevin Keegan. Together, they might have made a good pairing.
yeah.
But independently, Keegan was, if the opponents score 3, we'll get 4. Pearce was, we'll try to win it 1-0 if we can.
Yeah, he also had a bit of back and forth with Danny Mills, from what I can recall as well. And those two don't really speak now, do they? And I know that Danny Mills said that Stuart Pearce came in, because looking at it from the outside as well, I remember thinking, oh, crikey, this is quite exciting. A young English manager, psycho. We all remember the images from Euro 96 when he redeemed himself by scoring against Spain, having missed the penalty. Bodo Wilner, West Germany, 1990. We, of course, all remember that. But it didn't, like you say, it didn't quite work out. I remember the early days and you saw the passion. I remember him chucking his water bottle down in the technical area and you thought, oh, that's what it's all about. I remember Tim Flowers having to lean over to him after one game saying, no, Stuart, you've got to go and shake the manager's hand. You've got to go and do that. And he was so raw and so new and so exciting. But Danny Mills in particular, I remember he now speaks out and says that Stuart Pearce is one of those managers who comes into a club like he did at City, and there's that initial surge of, wow, this is awesome, it's Stuart Pearce. And then slowly that tends to dissipate. In the case of Danny Mills, Stuart Pearce seems to think that that's only because he replaced him with Micah Richards.
Possibly, but Stuart Pearce, yeah, I get that. The immediate effect, the uplift, you win the first 2 or 3 games, and then there's not much changes because he is passionate. He's always been passionate. His style of football was very, very passionate. His management style was probably very passionate. And you saw that on the touchlines, as you said a moment ago. But his actual technical ability, his ability to change a game, his plans B, C, D, I don't think he had anything beyond plan A, which was, let's try and win it 1-0, guys.
Yeah, indeed. And plan B, of course, was to bring your goalkeeper up in the final minutes of the game to try and get yourselves into Europe. On that case, David James against Middlesbrough didn't quite work out. This is the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport. We'll see you in a sec.
Love Sport.
This is Love Sport Radio. You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show with myself, Matt Beadle, and Paul Denby of the Man City Show podcast. England are currently 6-0 up now in Bulgaria. It's been quite the evening in Sofia. Racist chanting from Bulgaria fans. The game has been temporarily halted on two occasions, that being part of UEFA's three-step process, of course, to potentially halt proceedings and have the game abandoned if the chanting, if the abuse got too much. It appears, well, we know that the players have continued to play. The fans that appeared to be causing the trouble have left the stadium. They left early in the first half. It's not the greatest atmosphere inside the stadium at the moment, but it has improved since those fans left. Mason Mount is now on the pitch. Jadon Sancho is now on the pitch, but Harry Kane has extended England's lead. It is now England 6, Bulgaria 0. We will continue to bring you updates should anything else happen in that game. Moving back to Manchester City now. Paul, a story has come out today that's relatively interesting, a bit quirky. Of course, it is international break. There's not always a hell of a lot to discuss with teams when this goes on. Far too much going on the international scene. Two great bits of news. Of course, Kevin De Bruyne and John Stones have returned to training this week. But a bit of fun in La Liga because Sevilla are fast becoming an ex-Manchester City outfit. Plenty of players now when you look at it. Jesus Navas is at right back. Nolito, of course, one of Pep's first signings at the club. Didn't quite work out that one. Kind of almost a bit of a token signing to, you know, chip in with the occasional six-yard box goal. Ronnie Lopez as well, of course, who was at City for a brief period, looked like he might try and break into the squad. He's at Sevilla now, but not yet a first-team regular. But one other, Mr. Fernando.
Yes, Mr. Fernando, who was always the poor man's Fernandinho, I think he was referred to quite regularly. He was never quite as good as Fernandinho, actually, he was a long way behind him. But yeah, Sevilla picking up, we've got Navas from Sevilla, then sold him back to them a couple of years or so ago. So yeah, they've got a few ex-City players. Nolito never made it at City. He was just not quite good enough to do it. And Sevilla are one of those good Spanish teams that were always sort of Europa League level, bordering on Champions League, but they had a good run of winning the Europa League several years, and they play, from what I've seen them play, good football. They have had some good managers over the years, and I think it's interesting to see that they want to use some of those ex-City players who've had a little bit of pep in them, not too much in some cases, but to play the sort of football that they like to play going forward.
It was a funny period, that, wasn't it, towards the end of the Pellegrini era, because you had those players who now wouldn't really get a kick in Pep's side, you'd imagine. And it kind of got a bit tired with Bakary Sagna and Gael Clichy and Zabaleta. Whilst we love him, it got to the stage where those players were way past their best and it was time for them to move on. With Fernando, he's 32 years old now. He did have the nickname Polvo or Polvo because he had a great game against Real Madrid in the Champions League, and Polvo means octopus, I believe, in Spanish, and so they kind of said his legs and arms were everywhere. But it was a funny era at the time, wasn't it, because you just had a bunch of players that when Pep first took over the club just weren't really good enough for the City that we now know.
No, that's right, but the City we now know, with having Pep transform the team since his arrival, there was always going to be casualties. We had an ageing squad, particularly in defence, as you said, with Sagna and Zabaleta, and Kolarov was there, maybe not ageing, but he just wasn't quite good enough to deliver what we needed, and Clichy as well. So between all of them, it was inevitable that they would move on. At the end of the Pellegrini era wasn't great because Pellegrini knew he was going. I think he knew he was going from even longer out than we probably knew that he was on his way. I think it was always the case that the people at the club knew that Pep was coming in. And I think it was announced around about January, February before he came in that was going to be the case. I think Pellegrini was an honourable man. He always had a smile on his face, did the best he could. But the players knew what was happening. And as you say, some of those players were never going to stay at City. They just weren't up to the Pep standard. Having said that, there were quite a few who did, that survived and are still in the squad today and still in the team today. Fernando, even at his peak, for me anyway, was never quite good enough for what we were trying to achieve as a City team. He was, as I said a few moments ago, a poor man's Fernandinho, and just didn't quite deliver. I think we got him at the same time as we got Mangala from
Where was Mangala? Not Valencia, no.
No, Sporting Lisbon.
Porto, Lisbon.
It was a Portuguese team.
A lot of money.
A lot of money for both of them. Mangala, he had a fantastic first game. I remember he marked Drogba and marked him out of the game, obviously against Chelsea. And we thought, wow, what a player. And then it all went terribly wrong for him soon after that. I think he scored an own goal. I think it was against Hull City, and gave a goal away against Hull City, and lost his confidence, and then lost his place in the team, and then we fell apart with him in defence.
£42 million, I believe, and he left on a free, right? So he's now at Valencia, and he left for absolutely nothing.
And he did, and he was quite an honourable guy. He went out on loan a couple of times, but never said a bad word about City. He always tried to get in the team. I think he played once or twice with Pep when maybe it was in a cup game or friendly games even, but he never really got going. He was never going to play, but he never ever said a bad word about City, which was nice in this day and age where you hear some players leave after a sour time at a club, which in reality it was for Mangala, and he could have badmouthed us, but he didn't.
No, he didn't. My everlasting memory of Mangala, actually, I think he was going out for a warm-up whilst the game was going on, and he had a bubble hat on, and as he ran out, Pep Guardiola reached over and ripped it off his head. Don't you dare wear a bubble hat while you're warming up. You're warming up because you are a hard footballer, Mr. Mangala. This is the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
This is the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with Paul Denby of the Man City Show podcast. It's all over in Sofia. England have absolutely annihilated Bulgaria 6-0. And if there was any way to answer the abusive fans in the stadium, that was it. Marcus Rashford on the score sheet. Ross Barkley with a brace. Raheem Sterling with a brace. And Harry Kane to finish and complete the rout in Bulgaria. England fans have stayed till the bitter end. Harry Kane is there applauding them. Tyrone Mings, of course, on his debut, his international bow. To think that he was playing, I think it was in a ninth tier of English football just 4 years ago, has come right up through the English football tier system and is now a fully fledged English international. With the Bulgarian players also applauding their fans, you'd like to think maybe as a stand you'd walk out of the stadium and not applaud them. However, the chanting and the abuse that was directed towards England fans did actually stop shortly after the second half, because the group of ultras, is how we're going to describe them, wearing black hoodies, holding up abusive jumpers, making abusive gestures, we're hearing monkey chants as well that were directed at England's players, did walk out of the stadium around halfway through the first half. It has been quite an extraordinary turn of events in Bulgaria tonight. Gareth Southgate now speaking to Raheem Sterling. Jadon Sancho as well nearly made it 7 right at the death. But yes, a funny, odd, bizarre occasion in Bulgaria this evening. I'm sure there will be plenty of fallout from this one. And to be honest, yes, England have won 6-0, but you'd imagine that is not what the headlines are going to be all about tomorrow morning. Paul, it has been quite an extraordinary evening, hasn't it?
It has, watching some of the game in the background while we've been chatting along here as well. It'll be really interesting to see what UEFA do now on for Bulgaria. It's absolutely outrageous. They've got to do something pretty severe to try and stamp this out. If they just give them a X thousand euro fine and a half a stadium ban or a full stadium closure, it's not enough, because it's not working. They've got to do something that will really help stamp out racism in the grounds over the next couple of years, because we've got to get rid of it. And yeah, people say it's part of society, but that's wrong in society. We need to stamp it out in society, and football needs to help take the lead, because if we can stamp it out in football, which is a very popular sport in Europe, it might help educate other people that it's not acceptable in society as a whole anyway.
No, absolutely. Directing our attentions back to Manchester City. Bit of admin, of course. Kevin De Bruyne and John Stones returning to injury. Aymeric Laporte has put a picture on his Instagram story, I should say, of him hard at work on the bike machine. So hopefully it won't be long before he returns to fitness. I would have to say that Manchester City are very much looking forward to him returning. But also, the transfer talk is now ramping up as well, Paul. We're, what, a few months away from January, so we can see this being a daily occurrence. Ruben Dias of Benfica has been linked. But more importantly, a certain Ivan Rakitic of Barcelona is being talked up. Now, this is a player who is also being linked with a certain other club, not too far from Manchester City. And dare I say, crikey, let's hope not, but dare I say we get another situation like we saw a couple of years ago with Alexis Sanchez and Manchester United and Manchester City going head-to-head to secure the player.
It'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure that City do need a Rakitic at the moment. I think we do. We need the defensive cover. That's what we really do need. Hopefully Stones will be back for the Palace game at the weekend, as we said. City and United going head-to-head over players, and I think we won that battle. United got Sanchez, and unfortunately for Sanchez, and I don't really care about United, so unfortunately for Sanchez, it was a complete failure and a flop there. That's not the first time that's happened. But effectively, I think City in the transfer market in January, Pep will assess Stones' recovery when he starts playing again, hopefully this weekend and onwards. He's got to assess our other youngsters at centre-half and see, because Laporte probably won't be ready till about February from what I'm hearing at the earliest. He's got to then assess whether he thinks he can get through the latter stage of the Champions League, because that, I think, is his number one target with the centre-back positions as he's got today. Looking at the guy from Benfica, yes, I don't know too much about him, I've got to be honest. I don't follow Portuguese football that closely. But if we're looking at him, I dare say he must be a good player to be even considered.
There's been a lot of brouhaha about Sergio Aguero as well. This is a bit of a storm in a teacup. He's not joined up with Argentina this weekend because of a slight niggle of an injury. We've seen that he's in training. I'm just going to read something out, and we don't want to pay too much attention to this, but there was an article on Liverpool.com this week that said Man City's luck has run out against Liverpool and Sergio Aguero could make it even worse. And they allude to the fact that he's injured there. There is an injury crisis at both ends of the pitch. I've got to say, the propaganda has begun. And this actually, to be fair, Gundogan has come out as well this week and said that those two games against Liverpool are going to be crucial in the title race. We know that's the case, right? We know that is what the case is going to be. But this article in particular, Guardiola and City are going to be praying. They're going to be praying that Aguero is back fit. Well, it looks like he already is. He's in training today.
Of course, and who knows if it's a minor niggle and he's back playing. If he misses another week, so he misses another week. We don't rely on 11 players. Yes, we do rely on a couple of players who, particularly at centre-half, I think is our main weak area when we've got an injury or so. But we've got other players that can cover. Aguero's not our only goal scorer. We score goals all round the pitch. And Jesus, yes, he's not an Aguero, but he's a very lively player and will create problems. Don't tell me that Liverpool wouldn't miss a Van Dijk if he got injured, or if one of their three-star strikers, forward players, got injured. Of course they would. So it's the same issue that they've got to look after their players as much as we have to look after ours. And I don't mind a fully fit Liverpool team versus a fully fit City team, as was shown virtually when we played them at the Etihad earlier this season and at Anfield last season, where we drew 0-0 and in hindsight should have won with a missed penalty late on, but that's life. They will be two great games, and Liverpool will drop points this season. They've had a fantastic run. Ironic that they will equal our Premier League win record this weekend if they beat the team from Stretford, and it's on the same weekend. Again, ironic that we play Crystal Palace, who stopped our run two seasons ago. But that's life. If they get it, well done. It's not all in one season, it's the only minor difference. It's the points difference. At 8 points, we can't afford for it to get any bigger.
Absolutely. We are going to move on to that Crystal Palace match next on this Manchester City fan show. Before we do that, just a very quick update. The FA have tweeted the following statement following the situation in Bulgaria with England this evening, and it says, "We can confirm that England players were subjected to abhorrent racist chanting while playing in the Euro 2020 qualifier against Bulgaria. This is unacceptable at any level of the game, and our immediate focus is supporting the players and staff involved. as we are sadly aware, this is not the first time our players have been subjected to this level of abuse, and there is no place for this kind of behaviour in society, let alone football. We will be asking UEFA to investigate as a matter of urgency. You are listening to Love Sport. Love Sport. It's the Manchester City fan show on Love Sport. And yes, it is the opposition view. Time for the opposition view. On Saturday, we turn our attentions back to Premier League football, where Manchester City travelled to Selhurst Park to play Crystal Palace, 5:30 p.m. on Saturday. Of course, Palace have not beaten City on home turf since April 2015. On that occasion, a 2-1 victory with goals from Glenn Murray and Jason Puncheon. We've got James Howard from the Back of the Nest podcast on now to discuss Saturday's game and just how he thinks the Eagles will fare. James, thanks for joining us.
Good evening, chaps.
You well? We're looking forward to the game next Saturday. Of course, it has been a while since you beat Manchester City on your own patch, but last season you beat them on their patch with what we can only describe as an absolute thunderbolt from Andros Townsend.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we were all surprised with that game and the result. Last season we were very, very good away from home. That's where we picked up most of the points. We were very poor at home. A lot of fans were getting a bit fed up how we were playing, how we were set up. But this season we seem to have turned it around.
You have done. You've it's Paul here. You've got some good results. Obviously beating our great neighbours away 2-1, and beating West Ham a couple of weeks ago 2-1 as well. But you seem quite inconsistent. You sort of get stuffed by Spurs 4-0 and lose to Sheffield United as well. You're playing well, but you've not got that consistency. Is that something you can put your finger on as to why that happens?
We were very inconsistent last season, I'll give you that. We did pick up some strange away wins last season. This season, the Spurs game was unfortunate. Our home form has been very good this season. You know, we're unbeaten at home. I think it's going to be an interesting game because, you're right in what you're saying, that we are inconsistent. But I think also Man City are very inconsistent this season as well. You know, what Man City is going to turn up on Saturday, you know, is it going to be that one that's lost against Wolves or Norwich, or is it going to be the one that's, you know, winning 4-0, 5-0?
It's a great question, and I wish I knew the answer, and I hope it's the one that stuffs Watford. obviously, you don't. We have been much more inconsistent in our performances than probably I've seen a Pep team since the first season he was there. And that is a bit concerning for us as to what's going on. Palace tend to come at us a little bit more at your ground, and that opens it up a little bit more for us. Maybe we can get the result. What are your thoughts on the game in terms of where you think you might score some points against us or the goals, really?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've just watched the England game and I've seen Raheem Sterling score 2 goals. So I'm a bit disappointed with that because it looks as if he's still on form and very clinical. But personally, I think, you know, Saturday, I think we're going to be a bit of an improvement to last season's home game. I thought we were pretty poor. We were very negative last season. I think we'd kind of made ourselves safe. It was towards the end of the season and we were possibly just about mathematically safe, but we went about it the wrong way. Normally when you come to Selhurst, or any team comes to Selhurst, you know, the Liverpools or Man United have passed, and yourselves, you know, we've put up a really good fight, and you know, we've been on the front foot, and we've often got a sneaky win or we've got a draw. Last season we were particularly bad at home, but I think we're starting to build that fortress back at Selhurst Park, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I think this is a big game for us. It's, you know, on paper, obviously, you know, you'd expect Man City should win, but, you know, I feel that, you know, with the addition of some players that we've got, you know, Gary Cahill at the centre of defence, you know, a bit more solid. We've got Gaeta, a very good Spanish goalkeeper, at the heart of defence. And we've got confidence. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I think, you know, maybe we can make a game of it and not be one of those teams that you turn up and beat 4 or 5-0.
And to be quite honest, I'm not expecting to turn up and win 4 or 5-0. I hope we turn up and win and we put on a performance, not like we did at Carrow Road a few weeks back. And Palace is always a tough ground for us to go to. We've got some good results there, but I don't fear going there, but I never look forward to it, if that makes sense. I know that you can, on your day, turn over any team, and we will have to be at our best and score our chances to get a result there. But I feel that we know we've got to win, to be honest, because otherwise we'll be falling further behind Liverpool, and at this stage of the season, we can't afford to do that.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And I think maybe the pressure's on you guys more than us, although we're at home. Because, yes, you are sort of, you know, falling behind Liverpool in the league title. And, you know, we all know that you still haven't won the Champions League, which you know, is obviously, you know, one trophy that I'm sure you and the manager and the owners want you to do. And obviously, if you do, you know, end up season without you know, the league title and maybe not the European Cup as well, it just adds a lot of pressure on the club. And certainly you do need to start winning games, you know, like Palace away, to show that, yeah, you know, you can progress. But I'm really interested to see how it pans out, really.
Yep, it should be very interesting. James, just before you go, a prediction, if you will.
Okay, it's a difficult one for me. I did think about it and I thought you were going to put me on the spot. you know, my heart will say we will get a 1-0 home win, but my head says we're going to lose 2-0.
Ooh, gritty. James, thank you for joining us. Very much appreciate you coming on this evening. That was James Howard of the Back of the Nest podcast. He did just chuck in the fact that Man City haven't won the Champions League yet, didn't he? He just had to do that. I think he's trying to rile the troops. I've got to ask you, before we go, Paul, you mentioned there the record that Liverpool are set to crack on with this weekend because they are playing a certain team. Where do you stand on this? Are you bothered more about the record, or are you bothered more about a certain team getting one over on their other rivals?
I'd much rather Liverpool lost.
You would?
Yeah, yeah. I don't see at the moment United as our rivals. I see Liverpool as our rivals. If the team are ahead of us, I want them to drop points, simple as that. So, yeah, I'd love United to beat them 1-0 with a disputed 90th-minute penalty.
Good. Good answer, Paul. I'm glad you said that, because I think some fans would shy away from that type of answer. Just quickly to end on the Palace game itself, James there himself is hoping for a 1-0 victory, but believes that City are going to win 2-0. What do you think?
Heart and head says 2-1 City.
2-1 City. Wowzers. That should be a very interesting one. Will you be at the game?
I can't make it this weekend.
Tough,
no.
Isn't it? Selhurst, a very limited allocation at Selhurst Park. Well, this has been the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Spot. Paul Denby, thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure.
We will see you again soon, no doubt. And we will be back for the Man City Show on Love Spot next Monday.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.